Now please do what the smelly fug says, since I'm a huge fan of not dying. My con doesn't respawn like you travellers. Death is sort of a big, permanent deal for us.
So this thief really is with you,
came a female voice off to the right. In my peripheral vision, a swath of tree line rippled, distorted, then changed, revealing a short, curvy woman with an intricate pile of brown curls. She wore an elegant blood-red robe studded with shimmering jewels and carried a sleek dark wood staff, carved with ember-red script and topped by a fat crimson ruby the size of a pigeon's egg.
"Is that you, Abby?"
I asked, squinting at her. Abby and I went back all the way to our college days. We'd stayed in touch through a variety of MMOs, but I hadn't actually seen her IRL in years. The woman over there could have been Abby, though. She had the same dark skin, the same frame and build, the same hair. Though everything was refined and dusted with the sheen of over-perfect VR. She nodded and offered me a soft smile, dimples blooming in her cheeks. Those dimples were certainly the same.
It's good to see you, Jack.
Otto? She turned toward the armor-clad warrior.
You can let him go.
The warrior grunted noncommittally, then removed his blade and gave Cutter a little shove, opening up some distance between the two.
Otto, why don't you and the thief...
Name's Cutter, not thief,
Cutter interjected. Abby offered him a tight-lipped smile.
Okay. Otto, why don't you and Cutter get to know each other while Jack and I have a word? Just catch up a bit, then we'll be on our way.
Of course,
the gruff warrior Otto replied, before promptly grabbing Cutter by one arm and dragging him away.
This way, thief.
Abby came over and pulled me into a tight hug.
It's so good to see you,
she said, pulling back and regarding me from arm's length.
You too, Abby. You too.
I can't believe this place,
I said as an awkward icebreaker.
VGO is seriously incredible. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, it's definitely incredible, she replied, though she didn't look nearly as happy as I would have imagined. If I'd helped to create something as awesome and groundbreaking as VGO, even in a small way, I would have been through the roof ecstatic.
Will you walk with me a bit?
She asked. I nodded and offered her my arm, a small grin pulling up one corner of my mouth. Back in college, we used to walk between classes like that, linked arm in arm. Those were the days when I thought we might turn into something. Though, for whatever reason, timing, romantic complications, geography, career paths, that had never panned out.
You look good, I mentioned offhandedly. Are you a human?
She nodded.
A woad. I wanted to actually look like myself, and the human races were the only ones that offered my natural skin tone.
We kept walking, but she gave me a quick once-over from the corner of her eye.
Personally, I'm sort of surprised you went with a merc-elf. Not that I mind, exactly. You just look so... different. I sort of expected you to be human, too.
The merc-elves have some cool racial bonuses, I offered. We trotted on in an uncomfortable silence, feet carving a path through the vibrant green grass.
So... how's stuff back IRL?
I mean, aside from the world ending, I added weakly.
Moron. What kind of question was that? Who would want to talk about real life? What with real life teetering on the verge of total destruction?
She offered me a half-hearted smile and punched me lightly in the shoulder.
Good to see you haven't changed too much. Still the same old awkward Jack I remember.
She paused, glancing down. Shuffling along.
Truthfully, I'm tired. It's been a long year for me. A tough year. I lost my dad about 6 months ago. Large cell lung cancer. Ugly stuff. And with the schedule Osmark had us on, I didn't even get time for the funeral. Wow, Abby, I'm so sorry to hear about your dad.
She shrugged and waved off my comment.
It's the end of the world, Jack. Everyone's going to lose loved ones. Everyone.
But, to really top things off, despite my best efforts, my mom won't make the leap to Viridian. She says she's too old to start over, even though she's only 65. So I guess it's been a pretty shitty year, all things considered. How about you?
Yep, pretty much the same,
I said, red rising into my cheeks. By the way, I never properly thanked you for the capsule. But, you know, thank you. You saved my life after all.
You're welcome,
she replied. But maybe you should wait to thank me until you've fully transitioned. I've seen what happens to people who don't live through the process, and it's worse than watching someone die from cancer. I know from personal experience.
Well, that was certainly off-putting and terrifying.
I puckered my lips, trying to think of something I could say that might salvage this train wreck of a conversation. I floundered completely. How could I possibly follow up with anything appropriate after a downer like, it's worse than watching someone die from cancer?
Tough to recover from that.
So, what's the deal with the tank? I finally asked, just to break the terrible silence, jerking a thumb toward the retreating Reese.
Otto? Oh, he's my starting NPC, she said dismissively. The one who walked me through my intro to the world. A lot of players end up forming pretty strong bonds with their paired NPC. Is Cutter your starting NPC?
Well, he was in prison with me, if that's what you mean, I faltered.
Wait, so are you saying everyone starts with their own NPC?
She nodded, her gaze averted, still deep in thought.
Every player has a completely unique starting scenario with a custom NPC to lead them into the world of VGO. The 7 master AI controllers, the Overminds, analyze each user based on that specific user's internet profile and personal history. Then the Overminds create a starting NPC guide and a specialized initiation sequence that acts as a sort of hyper-advanced Myers-Briggs type indicator. The way each player reacts during the sequence and interacts with their NPC tells the Overmind what type of character class they'll most likely meld well with.
Wow. I replied, feeling dumb. That's incredible. Intense.
But it's also kind of creepy. How does Ozmark Tech get away with profiling people like that? Seems like a massive invasion of privacy. Aren't there laws against that kind of thing?
Oh, it's definitely a breach of privacy.
She stole a look at me and bobbed her head. And yeah, there are totally laws against it. But Ozmark Tech gets away with it because players sign an information release in their user agreement. Naturally, the release is written in legalese so dense a team of Harvard lawyers couldn't figure it out. And then it's tucked away in print so fine you'd need an electron microscope to find it. But it's there. And when you agree to play, you accept Ozmark's terms of service, profiling and all.
Man, if players found that out, they'd be pissed. Why even go through the hassle anyway? I asked.
Seems like it'd be a lot easier to just let players choose their class like in every other MMO in the world.
She shook her head and shrugged.
That's not my area of expertise, but if I had to guess, I'd say it's because the VR gameplay is so intense and personal that if you played a class outside of your personality tolerance, it could have adverse effects. Or,
she paused, arching an eyebrow,
it could be a marketing gimmick. I don't know. But then there's a lot I don't know about VGO.
Hey, out of curiosity, do you know if the NPCs are actually self-aware or not?
I voiced the question since it had been lingering on my mind ever since meeting Cutter in person.
If I didn't know any better, I'd say my starting NPC's a real person. He's sort of a jerk, but a fully fleshed out jerk. He certainly seems to think he's real. But it's weird because, from what I've gathered, he also genuinely believes VGO isn't a game. It's really tripping me out, actually.
Honestly, she frowned, hesitated, trying to decide what to tell me. Honestly, I'm not sure. No one is. We rushed the testing to get the game online, so I can't give you a straight answer one way or the other. The NPCs are procedurally generated by drawing on information from all over the internet. History, Facebook profiles, fiction novels, movies, games, which gives them their uncanny realism. I've never met an NPC that failed to pass the Turing test. But whether they're actually aware? She shrugged one shoulder. Time will only tell, I guess.
Once more we lapped into tense quiet as we edged nearer and nearer the ruins. The more and more I learned about VGO, the more I began to wonder what exactly I'd gotten myself into. It was too late to second-guess myself at this point, but it was still disconcerting. Maybe Abby was feeling the same way. It'd certainly explain her attitude. Well, would you like to tell me about this big secret mission you've got for us? I asked, trying to find any topic that would be a little less heavy, a little less depressing. She stopped, pulled her arm from mine, and took a step away as she folded her arms across her chest.
Jack, maybe you should just go. It might have been a big mistake to drag you into this mess.
A tear leaked from her eye and ran down her cheek. She reached up and swiped at it with the back of her hand. Abby, what in the hell is going on? I reached out and placed a reassuring hand on her shoulder. You're not a weepy damsel in distress. I've never seen you cry, not in all the years I've known you. So why don't you tell me what's eating at you? Just get it off your chest.
It's bad, Jack,
she said with a slight sniffle.
Bad for everyone. Maybe as bad as the asteroid. Even telling you could land you in a lot of trouble.
She paused, chewing on her lip.
Are you sure you want to know?
Abby, tell me, I replied, much more confidently than I felt. What could possibly be as bad as the asteroid? Sixteen. Bad to worse. Abby and I sat on a toppled log 20 or 30 feet from the ruins. Tell me what's going on, I prompted her again.
It's hard to know where to even begin, she said, looking away. Jack, there's just so much crazy shit going on. Like mind-blowing, world-shaking, secret conspiracy Illuminati shit. Tinfoil hat shit. And I haven't even shared this with anyone else because I don't know who'd believe me or who I could trust. Most of my friends,
she used air quotes,
work for Osmark Tech, and I sure don't trust anyone there. Not anymore. It all started a few months ago,
she continued.
It was a typical day. I was checking a line of code when I ran across an oddity. Someone had added an unauthorized locked quest, accessible only by special players. There had been all kinds of other crazy stuff leading up to this, so when this popped up, I decided to take a peek. I thought it might offer some clue about what in the hell was going on around the company. That's when I discovered there were hundreds of these locked areas scattered all around VGO, inserted by Robert Osmark's inner circle.
Are they supposed to be some kind of content for future patches or expansions? I asked, trying to think of the most reasonable explanation.
At first, I thought so too, but I kept looking, digging, hacking.
She shook her head, her gaze distant.
These areas were never meant for the general player population. These areas were built into the game as rewards for some of the big financial backers of VGO. People with lots of money and lots of power. Here's the thing. Osmark Tech knew about the asteroid long before the general public ever did. The government didn't release the info to the masses because they didn't want to cause premature panic, but my boss, Robert Osmark, knew. I'm sure of it. He didn't tell us peons, obviously, but in hindsight it's clear. He had us working around the clock, paying out overtime through the nose, rushing through beta trials to get things up and running ahead of schedule. And then, his inner circle started adding in all of these extra features last minute. To top things off, a few weeks before the media started to carry the story about the asteroid, Osmark himself dropped the news on us worker bees, sort of an extra work-your-asses-off incentive. Now, based on a series of hacked emails I uncovered, she continued, I think we had these special areas installed in order to help certain individuals game the system. I personally believe Osmark realized that VGO wasn't just a video game, not with the asteroid inbound. He realized VGO was the birth of a new world, a new dimension. Initially, the game was set up to put all starting players at the same disadvantages, to level the playing field for everyone. But the mega-wealthy, the politicians, the bankers, people in organized crime, they don't want a level playing field. They want an edge. And all of these new areas were expressly added to give those people that edge. In a couple of weeks after the asteroid hits and it's too late for anyone IRL to do anything about it, VGO is going to turn into a new feudal dark age, and everyone is going to be scrambling to carve out a piece of this empire for themselves. And the little guys, people like us, are going to get crushed in the mix. People like us are going to end up being the serfs, Jack, the unwashed masses for Uber players to lord over. Unless we fight dirty.
She fell silent for a time, the distant thrum of bird calls warbling through the air. I certainly didn't know what to say.
This zone right here, she gestured toward the meadow, has already been bought and paid for by a South American dictator named Alejo Carrera. I don't know what's buried in these ruins, but I know Carrera paid 20 million for it. 20 million, Jack. That's a lot of money for a few strings of digital code. So I've got to think whatever is here is powerful. These entitled assholes are going to have an advantage none of us regular folk get. And in the long run, it's going to turn ugly. And all the chaos coming down the pipeline only accounts for the human elements. The AI controllers running this system are cutting edge beyond belief. None of the overminds are really conscious, thinking beings. They're more like forces of nature that maintain the world's integrity, spawn creatures, create quests, but they're still dangerous. Really dangerous. I mean, the Overmind responsible for overseeing Serth Rog and his personal army is run by a repurposed military AI unit. Osmark acquired it from the Chinese military last minute to save time with development. Who knows what that thing might do?
She shook her head. Wait, I said, rubbing at my temples as I mentally waded through the tsunami of info I'd heard so far. Okay, I can believe Osmark Tech might have the ethics code of a banana republic dictatorship, but here's what I don't get. Why sell off VGO real estate for IRL money in the first place? The world's going to end in less than 9 days, so what's the point?
Well, Carrera didn't actually pay cash, she replied urgently, almost fervently, needing for me to believe her. Nope. Maybe 6 months before news of the asteroid broke, Carrera selflessly donated 20 million worth of essential tech components to help get VGO operational in time. He supplied Osmark Tech with colossal amounts of refined indium, gold, silver, copper, platinum, palladium, all essential components in the physical machinery powering VGO. He also supplied cheap labor to help at the next-gen VR capsule facility, churning out capsules at a crazy rate. And Carrera's not the only one either. U.S. politicians railroaded laws allowing Osmark Tech to bypass testing requirements. They rubber-stamped the import of dangerous and restricted materials, plus about 100 other illegal things. Osmark even got help from NASA to launch his satellite into orbit. And that repurposed AI I told you about? Another donation from Chinese military leaders. The amount of supplies and materials to get VGO up and running ahead of schedule were staggering, I'm sure. And I bet my completely worthless life savings there were people lining up around the block willing to help in return for future kickbacks. I think he's repaying favors to the powerful people who made VGO possible. Now, I want to give my boss the benefit of the doubt and assume he isn't actually a monstrous asshole. I like to believe he was just doing what he needed to do to save a lot of people, but he made some really shady deals to do it. And even if he isn't a monster, I can't imagine people like Carrera or the CIA or the KGB are going to be beneficent masters. They're going to amass power for themselves and be colossal dickheads just like they were in the real world, except there's not going to be a constitution or police force to keep them in check.
But why go through the quest system? I asked, turning the information over and over in my mind, examining it from every conceivable angle. Why not just turn these players into in-world gods right out of the gate? Just program it into the system.
It's complicated, she said, glancing around nervously, as though someone might be listening. After we brought all of the Overminds online,
she whispered, an edge of fear in her voice,
they closed the system to major changes. They're calling the shots now. The devs can only tweak things that are already consistent with the Overmind directives, hence using the quest system as a back door.
I was stunned into silence for a long while, my stomach churning with uncertainty. I bent over, leaning against my thighs as I hyperventilated. Abby had been right. This was some mind-blowing, world-shaking, secret conspiracy Illuminati shit. I knew transitioning into VGO was going to be a humongous, life-altering challenge, but I'd never expected anything like this. I was a 32-year-old EMT from the West Coast. I lived in a crappy apartment and made less than the typical burger flipper. I wasn't the kind of person embroiled in international politics or multi-million-dollar conspiracies, which was definitionally what we were talking about here.
You okay?
She asked, rubbing a hand along my back.
Nope.
Not even a little, I replied, still hyperventilating a little.
VGO was supposed to be a safe haven, I said finally. But if this is true, dying back on Earth might actually be the better option.
She didn't answer, probably because she knew I was right. Instead, she sat there, tracing a hand along my shoulders until I could breathe normally again.
So what are you suggesting?
I asked eventually, pushing myself upright. We're nobodies, Abby. We don't have money or connections or powerful friends. What exactly do you think we can do about this? Her face hardened with resolve. Gone was the weepy damsel from a few moments ago.
We aren't nobodies, Jack. We know MMOs better than most of the assholes entering this world, and knowledge is power, too. What I'm suggesting is that we get ahead of this shitstorm while we can. What I'm suggesting is you and I form our own clan, one that actually has a chance of standing up against the rising powers in this new world, one that can give people like us hope. And we start by stealing whatever's inside this restricted zone, whatever Carrera paid $20 million to get his hands on.
I stood with a groan and headed over to the standing stones. Abby trailed behind me, giving me some distance. I halted at the edge of the earthen pit, staring at the stairs that would take us into the dungeon. Or not. I could walk away. Just pretend I hadn't heard any of this, write Abby off as a nut job, as a loony conspiracy theorist. I almost wish she were just some crackpot psycho. But I didn't believe that. I opened my mouth to speak, but she raised a hand, cutting off my question.
Before you say anything, before you answer, I just need to tell you that if we do this, there's no going back. You need to know that. We're going to buck the system in a big way and potentially make some very powerful enemies with connections and deep pockets. And they'll come for us. Sooner or later, they'll come.
She paused and turned toward me, concern etched into the lines of her face. She was afraid I was going to turn her down and walk away.
Now, what were you going to say?
I want to know, why me? This is my life you're asking me to put on the line, I said, and I don't want to be manipulated into being someone's fall guy. You could have picked anyone, but you came to me with this. So, I want to know why. She stole another glance at me,
teeth working at her bottom lip. She sighed.
Because I trust you, Jack. And because I like you. And because you're the kind of guy who plays a cleric instead of a glory-seeking warrior or a flashy mage.
Wait, what? I asked, lips screwing up. You picked me because I usually play a cleric? I don't understand, not even a little.
Clerics aren't about glitz, glamour, flash, or glory. They're a support class. They end up in the background and they worry about the success of the team instead of their personal achievement. I thought about reaching out to some of the other guys from the Crimson Alliance, our gaming group. But in my gut, I wasn't sure I could really trust any of them with something this big. At least, not in the beginning. But you're a good guy, Jack. One who's always wanted to make a difference. That's why I worked my magic to ensure you got a capsule well before the news about the asteroid hit. Because I wanted you on my team even then.
She turned on me, pinning me in place with an unwavering gaze.
So, what do you say?
I looked away, regarding the mountains cutting across the horizon in the distance. All right, I said with a nod. I'm in. XVII. Into the Hole. We crept along a musty, downward-sloping passageway. The stone slabs worn smooth from age, the ground damp and soft from accumulated water. Abby's NPC pal Otto took the lead. Only natural since he was a hard-hitting melee fighter and a born tank. I padded along in the middle of the column, Warhammer out and ready as a backup line of defense, while Abby trailed behind. She was a sorceress, already creeping up toward level 30 and kitted out as a firebrand, a type of flame-centered spellcaster with some cool offensive and team buff skills. But she was also a total glass cannon. One good hit from an enemy was liable to wipe her out completely. Cutter wasn't anywhere to be seen. He was scouting ahead, ghosting through the shadows, using his abilities to disarm any potential traps well before we got there, while also keeping an eye out for potential opposition. The hallway, which dove solidly for 30 or 40 feet, eventually leveled out and opened into a wide room with a vaulted ceiling, which might have been a grand entry hall at some point in the far distant past. The place was all stone walls, massive earthen columns, and partially dilapidated statues marching along either side of the room. For all its former glory, though, time had really done a number here. Moss clung to most surfaces, creeping tree roots dangled from the ceiling in spots, and piles of rubble and debris littered the floor. Despite the decrepitude, however, I could tell the place was currently inhabited. Weak firelight, obscured by a hulking column in the center of the room, illuminated the far end of the chamber. A second later, Cutter stepped in from a pocket of shadow, urging us all to silence with a finger raised across his lips.
"Unfriendlies up ahead," he whispered as everyone pulled in close to him. "I disarmed several very nasty traps on the way in. Spring-loaded spikes, a plate-triggered flame wall, a ceiling-mounted buzzsaw big as a horse. Someone definitely does not want visitors." "What about the unfriendlies?"
I asked, still searching the room for any sign of movement.
"Tough. Not your typical brainless cave dwellers. These are real guards. Mercs. They're sitting around the fire gabbing and eating, but they look dangerous."
He knelt down and began to trace a rough map into the dirt with a finger.
"There's a trio of plate-armored warriors nearest to us."
He made three quick X's in a rough semicircle.
"A ranger with a mean-looking bow on the left."
A hasty circle marked the ranger's position.
"Plus two spellcasters. One might be a priest or a warlock of some kind. Here and here."
Two triangles, tucked away behind the X's, entered the fray. He paused, turning his eyes on Abby.
"What's the plan, Flame Lady?"
Otto turned, sharing a brief look with Abby, then nodded even though no words were spoken.
We're going to play this one out straight and simple. You and you.
He pointed to me and Cutter.
We'll stealth out. Thief, you target the sorcerer. Grimjack, you take the ranger. I'll give you both a 15 count to get into position, then I'll blunder out and draw their focus. Once the fighting begins, Abby will lay down wholesale suppressive firepower. Straight, simple, easy.
His speech was delivered coolly, practically, like a well-seasoned field general with 1,000 engagements under his belt.
Well, don't just stand there. Move!
He barked. Otto's sheer confidence was more than enough to convince me. So I nodded and dropped into stealth mode. Cutter broke right and vanished while I went left, slipping from broken statue to statue, maneuvering ever closer to the other end of the chamber. It didn't take me long before I spotted the hostile party for the first time. Cutter hadn't been joking. These guys looked tough as old boot leather. Two of the three melee fighters were hulking, muscle-laden Risi warriors in heavy plates that gleamed like polished onyx. The third, similarly attired, was a stocky female dwarf with a blunt-faced mace at her side. A Templar or a paladin of some kind, if I had to guess. The sorcerer was garbed in fine battle robes of heavy blue silk. Flares of fanciful silver scrollwork ran over the outfit in elaborate swirls. The priest, a dawn elf, wore plain brown robes, but the heavily worked staff he carried suggested he wasn't a lightweight either. Last was the archer, decked out in muted black leather armor. She was the only one not crowded around the fire. Instead, the vigilant huntress leaned against the far wall, a pair of large brown wings folded up behind her, her hawkish eyes roving ceaselessly over the terrain. I gulped. She was my mark. Truthfully, the thought of murking these guys made me salivate. I bet they had some phenomenal loot. Only part of me felt that way, though. The other part of me felt terrified, because even a casual glance at the party told me they were way out of our league. I fidgeted with my warhammer, adjusting and readjusting my grip as I stalked my victim, carefully placing every foot, checking every step so I wouldn't alert anyone prematurely. If Cutter and I lost the element of surprise and the backstab bonus that came with it, we didn't have any shot at all. At one point, just a few feet away from the archer, I put a foot down on a piece of stone which made a barely audible clack. I froze, because, as soft as the sound had been, the ranger's eyes locked onto my position like an owl spotting a field mouse. For a long, tense beat, I stood there, unmoving, unbreathing, sweat rolling down my face and slicking my palms. Then, her gaze softened and shifted as a noise came from the front of the cave, the clomp of heavy footfalls on damp earth. Otto. Thank God. The group of NPCs mobilized in a heartbeat, standing from their spots around the fire and moving almost as one toward the center of the chamber. The winged ranger glided past me, her eerie yellow eyes fixed dead ahead, the tip of one wing almost close enough to graze me. I wheeled about, bringing up my hammer, preparing for my strike, but stopped just shy as Otto came into view. Curiously, the hostile NPCs didn't attack. Rather, the priest in the burlap-looking robes shouldered his way to the front of the party, his head canted to the side, his face screwed up in a picture of puzzlement.
"Who are you?"
he asked at last, his voice a resonant baritone.
"How did you get here? You don't have the seal of Lord Carrera, yet here you are in an area reserved for him. Explain yourself. Or perish."
I held my hammer in upraised hands, trembling with indecision. What's going on here? What should I do? Strike or hold? Abby stepped forward from the entryway tunnel, her heavy cowl obscuring her face completely.
We are servants of Lord Carrera, the owner of this reserved area.
She replied smoothly, confidently. I knew Abby well enough to hear the bluff in her voice, but it was still a convincing performance.
I wasn't told to expect your party,
she continued, hands carefully smoothing out her robes. So can you please explain what you are doing here? What is the role and function of your group?
We're the mercenaries, the priest replied, eyes narrowing in suspicion. Mercenaries hired to lead Lord Alejo Carrera through this dungeon, to help him and his party power level and claim the treasure at the dungeon's end. That is the nature of our contract. If you are Lord Carrera's servants, why aren't you aware of these details?
On some unspoken cue, the mercenary warriors pulled free their weapons, the rasp of steel on leather hanging in the air.
Unless, of course, you are schemers and connivers. The words oozed scorn like venom. Give me the passcode. Now.
The priest's tone said no nonsense or further delays would be tolerated. Abby hesitated for a second longer, her body tight with indecision. Otto solved the problem for everyone by charging forward with a bellowing roar, his meaty sword flying from its sheath as he moved. The ranger drew an ebony recurve bow and sighted it. It was now or never, I knew. So I leapt, bringing my warhammer down before she could unleash a volley of arrows at Otto and Abby. Firestorm. I drove the nasty spike of my weapon into the ranger's back, aiming for one of her feathered shoulder joints, and I triggered my savage blow skill as I did it, increasing both my critical hit chance while adding a whopping 25% increased damage to the attack. Her bowstring snapped as she unleashed an arrow, but the shot went wide as she fell under my hammer, shrieking from the pain of my surprise attack. The spike punctured feather, skin, and muscle with ease, and the sheer force of the strike snapped the base of her wing bone with a sharp report that almost sounded like gunfire. Her HP bar dropped below 50%, a critical hit combined with the added damage of a stealth attack and my special blunt weapon move. A brutal combination. I yanked my weapon free as she wheeled toward me, slinging her bow in one practiced movement, then drawing a wickedly sharp knife. She lunged at me with an enraged shriek, lashing out with a lightning-quick thrust. I dropped back, raising my dinky wooden shield in a sloppy attempt to block, which I knew from the get-go wasn't going to do me a lick of good. And I was right. She was far too quick, shifting her weight as she moved, sidestepping right, then hooking the blade past my guard. The razor slid into my gut as though I were wearing a silk nightshirt instead of leather armor. I staggered under the terrible blow, the pain a hot poker wriggling inside me, making it hard to think. I sputtered, red burbling from between my lips and dribbling down my chin. She pulled the knife free with a grunt, my blood gleaming along the edge, and jabbed upward with a merciless heave, the tip aimed at my neck. With a desperate jerk, I batted away the incoming blade with the shaft of my hammer, diverting the potentially deadly thrust. She didn't seem to mind, though. She simply spun, catching me in the jaw with an elbow before dropping low and slashing her blade against my exposed thigh. Totally outclassed. I went down like a sack of concrete, my bleeding leg refusing to support my weight, while my health bar flashed like an angry strobe light. With gritted teeth, I pushed away from her, using my elbows to scramble back to gain some extra distance. She moved forward with a feral sneer, her blade upraised, a mountain lion preparing to maul some weak, injured deer. I fought to bring up my buckler, knowing it wouldn't do any good against an opponent like this, but doing it anyway. I wasn't going down without a fight. I flinched as she lunged, steeling myself for the agony of a killing blow. A wall of super hot air thumped into me like a giant unseen hand as an explosion ripped through the chamber, a deafening boom, which sent rocks scattering as great gouts of fire snaked and twisted around me. The sheer force of the detonation slammed me back, my head slapping up against a piece of rough stone. With all that said, the brilliant wave of flame didn't actually do any damage to my HP meter, which meant Abby had to be the caster. When I finally mustered the strength to lift my head, the ranger was no longer looming over me. Instead, she was rolling on the ground a few feet away, trying desperately to extinguish the hungry red flames crawling over her body, chewing mercilessly at her skin and hair. Her feathered wings were completely gone now, replaced by blackened nubs jutting from her shoulder blades. It was an awful scene to witness, game or not. The medic in me demanded I check her breathing, get some pressure dressings on those horrendous shoulder wounds, and slap some water gel on the burns for pain relief. Every instinct in my body said that's what I needed to do. Instead, I accessed my inventory, drained a health potion, then hastily gained my feet as the elixir went to work, knitting my torn flesh back together. Mustering as much speed as I could, I padded over to the dying bird woman and brought my hammer down on her throat with a sickening thud. For a long moment, I just stood there, staring down at the body, staring at the woman's crushed trachea, fighting the terrible urge to vomit onto the floor. This was the first human I'd killed since entering VGO. And it was awful. Why would someone design a game like this? A game that'd force office workers, school teachers, and retail clerks into situations where they'd be forced to murder people in gory detail. Another brilliant lance of flame streaked across my vision, jarring me from my own thoughts. On instinct, I pulled my hammer away and took a quick survey of the room. The spellcaster was already dead by Cutter's hand, and one of the melee warriors was down as well, his head nearly cleaved off by Otto's vicious sword blade. That left the priest and two other fighters. Abby was going to town with her magic, slinging powerful and flashy spells at the enemy swordsman, while Otto and Cutter fought the beefy Templar woman head-on. Otto drew aggro as Cutter danced around her in a whirl of steel, his blades flashing out in streaks of silver, drawing blood with every swipe. That left the priest, who was currently in the back chanting some sort of divine spell. A chanting priest was too dangerous to ignore. I tried to slip back into stealth, but failed. My stamina was too badly depleted from my scuffle with the ranger. So instead, I broke into a sprint, low-grade panic spurring me on, ducking past the brawlers before throwing myself at the priest. I sailed through the air like a cruise missile and hit him around the waist, driving a shoulder into his gut. We both went to the ground in a tangle of limbs. He landed with a muffled curse, dust mushrooming up around him in a puff, while I ended up on top of him. A relieved smile broke across my face. I'd managed to interrupt his spell, even if my tactic hadn't been elegant or graceful. The priest awkwardly flailed at me with his staff, but without distance and leverage, the attacks were merely a nuisance instead of actually being harmful. Unfortunately, the same thing applied to me. Straddling the guy didn't offer me much opportunity to use my hammer. I let the weapon clatter to the floor and promptly laid into him with my fists, working over his face and torso until he finally stopped struggling. Not dead, his health bar still had over 25%, but stunned. Even after he stopped resisting, though, I kept hitting until someone finally dragged me off the bloody priest. "You're good, Grimjack," Cutter murmured, his arms wrapped around my chest, restraining me. "But he's still breathing," I snarled, straining toward my hammer, ready to kill the priest, to finish him for good. "We know," Abby said, strutting over and kneeling next to the downed man. "And that's a good thing. Hard to get a dead prisoner to talk. And I've got a feeling this guy has a few more things to tell us before his usefulness is exhausted." She ran her hands over the priest's downed form, palms a few inches above his body, while she chanted in some archaic language. Tendrils of fire, most as thin as my pinky, spread over him, wrapping him in a tight, brilliant cocoon of flame. Suddenly, he lurched upright, lifted from the ground by Abby's magic, though he was still unresponsive.
"Flame of holding," she said, glancing at me over one shoulder. "This'll keep him immobile while we question him."
Next, she stood and pulled a red vial from her bag, identical to the one I'd chugged a few moments before. She regarded the glass bottle before uncorking it and dumping the liquid into the priest's slack mouth. After a long moment, the Dawn Elf sputtered and coughed, his body shuddering and shivering as he opened swollen eyes.
"Good work, Jack,"
she said, patting me reassuringly on the forearm.
"Now we don't have much time. Aliejo Carrera and his thugs could show up any moment, so Otto and I are going to interrogate our friend here, see if we can't get a heads up about what we're going into. In the meantime, you and Cutter loot these bodies. Sound like a plan? Oh, and you can keep whatever you find."
She didn't even wait for me to respond. Instead, she offered me a dimple-cheeked smile and dragged the priest off with Otto's help. Cutter finally let me go, offered me a hearty slap on the back, then swaggered over to the body of the mage he'd killed and began searching the bloody corpse, happy as a kid on Christmas morning. I shuffled from foot to foot as I eyed the brutalized and smoldering ranger. The last thing I wanted to do was go over and pick over her charred and battered body. But loot was loot. Still, it felt dirty. Wrong. But loot was the goal of these kinds of games, I reminded myself. Cheap loot meant money in the bank, and good loot meant life. Good loot meant power, influence, status. Good loot reduced the chance of being killed or feeling the pain of this place. With a sigh, I headed over, squatted down, then began checking her person. Thankfully, like with the corrupt Waldgeist, I didn't actually have to search her pockets or rip the armor from her body. An inventory menu popped up in front of me, displaying my spoils. I whistled. Very impressive. The boots were standard leather, though of superior quality, which meant they were a heck of a lot better than what I was currently sporting. I slipped them on without a qualm, then turned my sights on her armor, which was truly a cut above. Knight-blessed armor. Dark black leather covered in swatches of ebony ring mail in the most vulnerable places, like along the shoulders, across the stomach, and down the spinal column. It was medium armor instead of the light armor I'd used up to this point, which offered better defense, though slightly reduced speed, movement, and evade bonuses.
"Knight-blessed armor. Armor type, medium, modified leather. Class, rare. Base defense, 62. Primary effects, +5 to constitution, 15% resistance to piercing damage, 15% resistance to slashing damage, 10% resistance to all elemental and arcane-based damage."
I threw the armor on and instantly felt stronger, more resilient, less tired. Lastly, I snatched up a beautiful recurve bow with a +10 dexterity boost and a 10% increased chance to evade, worth a staggering 150 gold, and also pocketed a small bag of silver coins. I moved on to the next body, one of the warriors Otto had killed, and began the process all over again. This time, rummaging through the belongings of a butchered NPC didn't bother me quite so much, which was a little troubling in itself. In the end, I walked away with another 225 in gold, a ring of slaying, +5 to strength, and heavy fire steel gauntlets, worth another cool 75 gold. I hadn't been to a proper store yet, but I imagined these kinds of weapons and armor weren't the types of gear lobies were supposed to get. I wasn't sure what else awaited us inside this dungeon, but if these were the door prizes, it had to be something epically awesome.
XIX. The Long Road Down. We moved from the entry chamber into a circular stairway that drilled into the earth. The steps were slick stone. Vines and strands of moss hung down from ancient archways, constantly brushing up against me as I moved. Once more, Cutter was gone, scouting, and Otto was out in front, treading carefully, searching for anything our resident thief might have missed. This time, though, we had a new member to our party, the burlap robe-wearing prisoner, who turned out to be a mercenary warlock, not a priest. That'd be the same burlap robe-wearing warlock I'd almost bludgeoned to death. He was still bound by the Flame of Holding, and he floated along between Abby and me, carried by a simple levitation spell. So far, we'd made our way through passageway after passageway, always winding deeper into the heart of these old ruins. We'd run across tons of deadly rigged traps in just about every variety and flavor, but so far Cutter had proven to be as good a thief as he kept claiming. And he claimed to be the absolute best in Eldgard often and loudly. We'd also tangled with a near-endless horde of corrupt Waldgeist, though no more NPCs, which I was silently grateful for. Surprisingly, the corrupt Waldgeist were pushovers, one and all. Superficially, the creatures looked identical to the beasts I'd tangled with in the forest beyond the ruins, but that's where the similarities ended. These things moped about aimlessly, only attacking when you were in spitting distance, and even then a strong breeze would knock them over. Pitiful, really. The strangest thing of all, however, was the amount of EXP each one had, easily 8,000 apiece, which was larger than some low-level bosses. Yes, we had to split the EXP between four, but that was still 2,000 points per head, and we must have killed 60 or 70 of the things. Since we were in an almost constant state of combat, I didn't take the time to pull up my character stats or check my skill notifications, but I was sure once I finally had some time to look them over, I was going to be as pleased as a cat with a ball of yarn. The corrupt Waldgeist didn't drop much by way of gear, just like their counterparts topside, but they practically exploded with gold. Each kill netted us 50 gold. 50 gold each. Most also carried a potion or two, which were certainly a nice bonus. So, this is some kind of quick and easy grind for the uber rich, huh? I mused out loud after collecting my share from yet another group of shambling mobs. At this point, I wasn't really worried about making noise since the resistance here was basically non-existent. Yeah, Abby said from behind me, a slight note of scorn in her voice. Doesn't seem fair, does it? Everyone has to start off fresh in a new world, but guys like Carrera still find a way to game the system in their favor. It's incredible. She shook her head. Really pisses me off, you know?
But you're benefiting, our hostage warlock replied, and you don't seem to be complaining.
Other than the terse answers he'd provided during the interrogation, he'd been silent up until now.
If you were really so noble, he said, you'd leave this place untouched. Just turn around and walk away. The fact that you're continuing onward suggests you don't mind the benefit so long as it's directed at you.
He sounded smug all the way down to his toes. The worst part was, he was sort of right. I shared an uneasy look with Abby. Are we really doing the right thing here? It's different with us, she replied, a bit unconvincingly. We're doing what we need to in order to make it an Eldgard, and we're going to help other people, to benefit the people who couldn't afford to pay to cheat their way to the upper echelons in this new society.
Ah, the mercenary said with a slick grin. So you're an ends justify the means kind of lady.
No, you're twisting my words and skewing the situation out of context, she protested. All I'm saying is this stuff is here, and that means someone is going to get it, and I'm just saying it's definitely better for people like us to get it than some cocaine-financed dictator. Yeah, I said, nodding in agreement, working to convince myself. Besides, what's it to you anyway? I asked the merc, my brow furrowed in annoyance. You're a mercenary who works for the highest bidder. I don't think you're in a position to judge us on issues of ethics. No judgment, he replied with a tight shrug, made awkward by the bands of fire encircling him. You're right, I am a mercenary. Personally, I think your logic is flawed. But then I regularly do questionable things for money. I only bring it up because I think there might be an opportunity for us to work together in the very near future. Supposing you all can get past your veneer of self-righteous hypocrisy. What are you talking about? I asked. You'll see soon enough, he replied, once more overflowing with smugness. Abby gave him a hard look. Her lips puckered into a tight line, and suddenly, the priest had a gag of flickering fire in his mouth. It didn't seem to hurt him, but it certainly prevented him from speaking further.
That's enough out of you,
she mumbled, gaze downcast. She looked guilty. Maybe the mercenary's accusations had gotten under her skin. They'd certainly gotten under mine. After a time, the hallway morphed into a natural underground cavern, with jagged walls and a small burbling stream, studded with large boulders that zigzagged its way through soft black earth. Bioluminescent moss clung to the ceiling overhead, shedding a pale green light that reminded me of a toxic waste spill. We walked on in silence for a bit longer, following the stream. I wonder why they didn't give the mobs even more EXP, I asked idly, just trying to break the thoughtful quiet. Not that 8,000 a pop is bad, I said, but if cheap leveling is the name of the game, it seems like the devs could have just dumped a bunch of corrupt Waldgeists with, like, I don't know, 100,000 points apiece or something crazy like that.
I'm sure they would if they could, Abby replied,
the sound carrying over the muted clomping of our feet and the burble of the water. Trust me on that. But the devs only have so much control. Early on, maybe they could have done something like that, but not now. Now, the overminds are the real power in VGO. And once they were up and running, we could only tweak relatively insignificant things. Really, the overminds do all the heavy lifting. They generate content, creatures, quests, everything. They're basically in-game gods. Each overmind has an underpinning of base directives that govern their character, keeps them from going completely rogue, but it's like holding a lion in check with a leash made of bacon.